Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
Do you hate yourself yet?
No, I hate you.
Yes. That's fair. Don't we all, though? Don't we all?
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. We've got Brooke. No, we don't have Brooke here. What the fuck? This is Thursday. We've got Bree here. We've got Jacob here. And we've got Aki here.
Good start.
Jeez.
I didn't even have to ruin it this time. Man. Awesome. Yeah.
It's been a crazy week for me, so... How's everyone doing? Brooke, how are you?
I'm just going to
address Brooke all episode like she's here.
Do we need to make like a little Brooke puppet and yes. Just like you can just have like, you know, flat Stanley, you just like pop it up in the window and just like have some little like clips on your audio board? That would be fabulous.
Yeah, we need more Brooke on our audio board. So, hi, Brooke.
You know. Hello.
There we go. So yeah, how are y'all? I'm obviously like not doing great, so how are y'all?
I almost just watched my wife die. She's dancing to distract me from recording, and she just tripped over part of the floor, and she nearly ate shit in the kitchen.
And nice. There's lots of laughter over it, so I'm assuming that means she's okay.
Yeah, she's I think she's good, but like,
there's no horrified screaming, so that's a plus for once in Jacob's house. No horrified screaming.
Yeah,
Jacob, she married you. I don't think she's good, but we can move past that, I guess, for now.
Oh, you know, I'm stable, so I've got that going for me.
Sure. Sure.
Sorry. I don't know if I'd say stable, but I'm predictable.
Okay, that I can agree with.
Yeah.
You are painfully predictable. Yeah.
I'm painfully predictable. Jeez.
Yeah.
Sounds like a good episode title.
Well, anyway, if we're talking about our weeks and stuff, I'm finally coming down with the cold or flu or whatever that everyone else in the house has had.
Nice. Fun. GG.
So. Thank you. Like I slept for like
even when your family gets sick, you come in last.
Yeah, because I'm the one that like I don't go outside, so why would I be the first one to get sick?
That's true. I'm a hermit too.
I work from home. Like if I have to go buy groceries, I use the Target like. You know, thing where you just roll up in your car and they put it in your trunk. Like, if I don't have to talk to people or interact with them, I'm solid.
Yeah, we DoorDash all the time, so I can sympathize on that level.
That shit's expensive. Like,
it adds up, but
especially if it's like 5 minutes from your house, that like I draw the line at that.
I also like, don't like going to the outside.
No one on outside. This show does. That's
why we're on the show.
That's why we do a podcast.
Exactly.
I did leave my house today. I didn't like it. I almost got stranded. So my truck is having issues, and I hate it because I can't fix it right now.
Did you give it a good solid kick?
I did sort of. I pushed it forcibly into a parking spot at a Wendy's and gave it a good long 10-minute break while I got food I didn't really need to pay money for because I'm broke and I need money to fix the truck. But yeah, and then after I ate the food, it agreed to take me the rest of the way home, and that's something.
Jeez.
Wow.
Yeah. I know what the problem is. It's not super expensive. It's just more than what I have right now. So, yeah.
Ah, okay.
Have you considered turning into a professional killer and you know, funding your auto bills that way.
Well, so I already quit that job and I sort of like torched that bridge, so I can't really go back.
Damn,
oh. That's a discussion we shouldn't have on this show.
I would have paid you to deal with Jacob. That's a shame.
Unfortunately,
I like Jacob's nervous chuckle.
Unfortunately, Bree doesn't think I'm worth more than $5. So
see, the worst part is I've told you guys so many credible weird things that I've done. I could totally be telling you the truth.
I know. That's the weird thing, is that I don't know what to believe.
Yeah.
You've had such a crazy life that I could believe pretty much anything you say.
Yeah,
I'm wholly unconcerned either way. It's like, ooh, you could have been an assassin. I don't, whatever.
You know who are what people are concerned this week?
A lot of things.
A lot of employees from Epic Games. They are concerned.
Yeah, not just them.
It's been a bonkers week of news. We should probably get into all this stuff.
We should.
The big news today is that Epic Games is laying off 16% of its staff, clocking in at nearly 900 people.
That's for all of them. Yes.
Yeah. Also, V-Bucks are going up in price. Ha 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 ha.
So with Epic, is that just like from the main company, or does that include like the subsidiaries and stuff?
That includes pretty much everyone under their umbrella, I believe, because I know some people at Harmonix got laid off, which has a lot of people wondering how much longer Rock Band DLC is going to go.
Didn't they just say that a bunch of it was being delisted?
No, that's Rocksmith.
No, that. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm curious how this Epic stuff is going to go down. There was just some big lawsuit that I guess they're going to have to pay a bunch of money over. So that could be some of the reason that they're, you know, looking to downsize a little. But they were also supposed to be building a new campus, actually not far from my house.
Really?
You know, yeah, I mean, within like an hour and a half. But yeah. Something that was in the works. Well, you know, for me, anything under 2 hours is close. So yeah, I live in the middle of nowhere. Yeah.
Oh, fair enough.
So yeah, Epic Games. Hopefully they could figure out what's going on there and sort out their shit. It's hilarious that so many layoffs are happening right when V-Bucks are going up in price. A 1,000 V-Bucks is going from $7.99 to $8.99.
Hmm. Doesn't sound like a huge increase, but that'll add up quick.
Oh, that adds up very quick with how many people buy V-Bucks.
I'm not going to lie. Like, I noticed, because Fall Guys is Epic now. They completely redid their store in there, and they're offering way more shit than they used to.
On Fall Guys?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
Well, I'm also wondering if it's like they're trying to really drum up sales and justify it. Because they're also changing some of the game modes this week, and they're like, we're just running some studies, quote unquote, but like, it kind of felt like we're trying to justify our existence kind of thing.
Ouch.
And then because I was playing with my buddy Baron like earlier in the week, and like we had made the comment about like, it feels like they're trying to justify their existence all of a sudden. And then later this week, the news of the layoffs come, and it was just like, oh, that's weird.
Yeah. But another company that might have to justify its existence soon is Platinum Games, because Hideki Kamiya is leaving the company. He was like the big name that kept that place going. So who knows?
And a lot of people leaving places too.
Yeah. Because I would say arguably the biggest news regarding a step down is Jim Ryan is stepping down as the PlayStation boss in March. He is retiring after 30 years with Sony.
Awesome.
That's the official news. Yeah.
Yeah. So
yeah,
that's Epic Games, Platinum Games, and Sony boss.
I got one more, if you don't have it on your list. And this was earlier today. Sega is canceling Hyenas, and Creative Assembly, one of their studios, is going to be doing a redundancy consultation, and that will involve a lot of layoffs.
Jeez.
Yep. It's happening all over.
It's a wonderful week for everyone, I guess. Oh, man. What do you think about Jim Ryan stepping down? Do you think that's a sign of bigger... Do you think it's a sign of bigger changes to come with Sony? Do you think they might try to uproot and move more back to Japan? Or do you think they're just going to stay the course and do what they're doing?
Maybe they're going to diversify.
Yeah, I don't think they're going back to focus on Japan. I don't see that happening with a lot of Japanese companies being like, we can't just focus on Japan because we're not making enough money anymore. So I don't think they're going to go just focus on Japan again. That would be kind of silly. But now they might stop fucking around Microsoft, so that's nice.
Who knows? We'll see.
Maybe.
You mentioned companies trying to expand out of Japan. Square Enix has kind of gone on record this week blaming their Final Fantasy 16 sales on the PS5 exclusivity.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, weird. Oh,
yeah,
big shocker.
Yeah.
Go figure. Not releasing on PC day and date affects your sales. Not releasing on Xbox day and date will affect your sales.
I still can't get over the fact that way back when they're like, we can't just focus on just the Japanese player base and then focused on only Sony, which is a lot of the Asian marketplace.
Didn't do bad. It sold well. It just didn't sell Square well, what they wanted.
It didn't sell as good as their absolute pinnacle of games, which is all they want anything to sell, which is insanely stupid because you can't have a pinnacle game if all your games sell like that. That's not how these things work.
I think they were expecting Final Fantasy VII remake numbers, and they didn't get that.
Yeah, and I think Final Fantasy VII remake would have had better numbers if they, ported released it fucking it everywhere. Platforms. Yeah,
that'd be nice. Who knows? Maybe after Octopath releases, we'll see more Square games come over. It would definitely be nice.
Yeah, I'll get the Final Fantasy games. Well, at least the newer ones and the remakes. Like, I'm not particularly fussed about the pixel games like you guys. Well,
shut the fuck up. You're fired.
Oh, my God. Wait, is that all that takes?
Damn. I'm free. Holy shit, you guys, I did it.
Joe, I hate the pixel games too. I don't want
to
see.
Get back to work.
You're stuck, bitch. I'm free.
Oh, man.
But I said I hated them.
Speaking of PC releases, Sony announced Horizon Forbidden West Complete Edition is hitting Steam and Epic in 2024.
Nice.
Cool.
So that's cool.
I just hope it runs well, because from what I understand, when the first one came to Steam, it ran like shit. So hopefully this will run real well from the get-go.
Hope so. It's good to see it happening. The more Sony games releasing on PC, the better. It lets more people play and have fun. Obviously, I don't expect them to release on Switch or Xbox like MLB The Show. That's kind of a unique situation. Let's see, more Sony news. The PlayStation Plus games for October were announced. They are getting the Callisto Protocol, Farming Sim 22, and Weird West.
Okay, interesting.
A lot of people are pretty pissed with that lineup.
Wait, like, why?
Because the Callisto Protocol underperformed, and the studio had just left the company.
Mm-hmm.
Farming Sim is a farming game, and Weird West is now just leaving Game Pass and jumping over to PS Plus. A lot of people are expecting more for that massive price increase that just went up with Sony.
Uh-huh.
I don't think it's a bad lineup. I think
I thought that was fine.
Farming Sim, but Sony, like the Sony diehards on the PS blog, are not happy.
Well, yeah, they just need to get over that. They're never
ever happy.
No, probably not. Realistically,
I mean, how many people really were happy with Games with Gold for the longest time either? So, but it's really over now. So,
thing is, PS Plus has been pretty solid all year. It's just after such a big price increase, people aren't happy.
Yeah, I don't think it really matters what they put on there. I don't think anyone would be happy with it. That price increase is bullshit.
Yeah.
And I think that's exactly how everyone feels, is this is bullshit. It doesn't matter what they put on it. They're still not going to be happy because it's still bullshit price.
Well, you know what else has been bullshit?
A lot of things.
the launch of Payday 3.
I mean,
tutorial's cool.
Did they finally patch offline? Because I saw that they...
No, that's the news I was about to report, is that the launch has gone so poorly, Starbreeze are discussing adding some kind of weird thing called an offline mode to the game.
Something it should have started with, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Because it fucking needed it.
Apparently, modders found out that there is an offline mode in the game, but all progression is tied to the servers. And even if you were to play offline with the mod, you don't get any kind of XP or leveling up without being connected online.
So, well, I mean, dumb. I would assume that that's what they're trying to fix right now.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Hope so.
So then you would get progression.
Hopefully. It'd be nice. It would be nice. It would also be nice if people could log in general, but, you know, whatever. Capcom COO stated that they would gracefully decline any acquisition offers when they were asked in an interview about Microsoft's recent purchase spree. Do you think that's newsworthy? Like, everyone made a big deal about it this week, and I'm just sitting here like, okay, so they don't want to be acquired.
They don't want to be acquired by... Hold on. I mean, the thing is that it's they don't want to be acquired by Microsoft.
No, well, they just don't want to be acquired. They
like their partnership with the way that it is kind of like what they said. So yeah, they're not looking to sell or be acquired.
They're not looking to buy either. They said they're happy with what they're doing and they're not looking to buy or sell.
So. Yeah, I don't think that's really news. I don't know why people were going crazy about that. That's like,
well, because I mean,
no big name group is going to be like, yes, we want to be bought. No, none of them are going to say that, whether they want to or not.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it was just
they were failing miserably. So.
Yeah,
not really.
But all those leaks just created a buzz, and I think that people are just sort of like drawing at things to kind of keep in that loop or whatever.
Got to keep those clicks coming.
Mm-hmm.
The COO stated in another interview that games are too cheap today and they should cost $80 to $100.
Well, maybe that asshole should pay their workers more. And every asshole should pay everyone who works more. And then maybe, yeah, sure, I could get behind that. But the cost of everything in life has gone up thousands of percent, and the amount people have been paid has gone up less than 30. So he can go suck a dick.
Tell us how you feel.
I was also about to say, like, you know, maybe then don't release games like Exo Primal.
Yeah, that would probably help the bottom line too. God, that game's... I still think that game's terrible.
I mean, Capcom for the most part releases good stuff. Exo Primal just didn't click with a lot of people, but the rest of their output's been pretty solid. Now, I wish they would have brought Battle Network to Xbox, and I still hope they do, but
I would have wished that they still, like, you know, made Mega Man Legends 3.
That's not something you just got to get that. Over. It's been how long?
Nope. I'll never get over it, Joe.
I can
tell. Isn't there like 10 of those or something?
Legends? No, there's only 2. And an offshoot. Oh.
Well, and also the spinoff, yeah.
2 and Tron Bonn. Let's see, what other news? Baten Kaitos 1 and 2 has been rated for PC in Australia. So that might be jumping to PC. That'd be cool.
I'd like to play, yeah.
I'm not sure what that is.
They were GameCube games.
Yeah.
Oh, I never had one of those. Released
on the Switch. Now, potentially PC.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Unfortunately, they probably won't show up on Xbox or PlayStation because I believe they were originally funded by Nintendo.
Okay.
In partnership with Bandai Namco, so.
That's fair.
Yeah. We mentioned it earlier, but Rocksmith 2014 will be delisted on October 23rd, and the DLC will follow. There were no dates given on the DLC, but most people are thinking that they have 10-year licenses on everything, and as that 10-year hits, they go bye-bye.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want any songs, grab them while you can.
I never got into Rocksmith.
You're probably going to pick up every last one of them you don't own.
No, I'm not. I'm not good at Rocksmith. Like, I like to dabble in it, but I'm not good at it. And I don't want to spend too much money on that series because I can't play them. I'm not that good.
Who here wants to bet he's going to spend like $200 on fucking Rocksmith DLC?
Nah, I didn't spend that much on Guitar Hero DLC, and I could have spent it on Rock Band. I made my choice.
The better choice.
Yeah. Sekiro has hit 10 million units sold.
Awesome. I'm surprised it didn't hit that a while ago, honestly. That game seems like it's been pretty popular the entire time on every console.
Well, 10 million is still not a number to sneeze at.
Yeah, I'm just surprised it didn't hit that earlier. Yeah, that's an awesome number. Congrats to those guys.
Game Pass is going to be available on the Meta Quest 3 this December through Cloud Gaming.
Cool.
Yeah.
So xCloud in VR on the Meta Quest. I'm sure it's just going to be like a giant screen that you watch, but it's cool. It's better than nothing.
Bigger picture, this is exactly what I think has been the move for cloud gaming and everything that they're trying to do. You know, the reason behind some of this Activision acquisition and all this other stuff is that they're trying to find new ways to put these games in different platforms and different ways that you can access them. And this is exactly that kind of example. So, I mean, I'm hoping that it goes really well.
Hope so. Thimber's saying, Capcom news, Resident Evil on the iPhone is apparently going to be $60.
Yeesh.
Jeez.
Yeah, that's a pricey one.
Honestly, I thought they were putting it at 70, so that's slightly better than what I thought, I guess. Still not good, but...
I'm trying to find it on the store, but I don't see a price for it. I don't know. But it requires iOS 17, and I don't know if my phone will even run it. So I wouldn't pay that much for Resident Evil on a phone anyway. Like,
oh, hell no.
I had a hard time paying $10 for freaking Final Fantasy.
I forget what I have. I think I have an iPhone 13, and that's able to run iOS 17. So
how is it? All right.
So it should be most iPhones.
Cool. I'll just chug. EA delisted all of their previously released FIFA games from all storefronts. FIFA 22 and 23 are still playable via EA Play, but it looks like with the whole loss of the FIFA license, they're just cutting it all and going away, keeping just
I think they have to. Yeah.
Well, something's got to be there that allows them to still have FIFA 22 and 23 in EA Play. There's got to be some kind of agreement still in play.
Well, yeah, I mean, but they can't sell it, so.
Yeah. I don't know. Something that won't be sold anytime soon is the console versions of Cities: Skylines 2. They've been delayed to spring.
Mm.
They say why?
To make them better. It's still releasing on PC, but the console versions are getting delayed to spring. Yeah. And then last bit of news I have is one more delay. Banishers Ghosts of New Eden has been delayed from November to February 13th.
Well, that's not so bad, kind of.
It's only 3 months. It's not a horrible delay. They said it's too crowded in November. There's too much shit releasing in November. So they're going to move to February where there's too much shit releasing.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
What they need to push it to is like May 12th, so I can give myself an early birthday present.
Why would you want it delayed even further?
Because there ain't gonna be anything in fucking May, probably. So I can buy that and fully focus.
I mean, you could just wait to buy it until May.
No, because I want that the day it comes out.
Has Aki ever shown a time where she's not impulsive?
No, I'm always impulsive. I am very bad at that. Yes, I want that game and I want it now. It's a shame.
You know what I want? I want some news from y'all. What kind of news do you have? Aki, anything?
No. We the first bit of news was my news, so.
GG. Bree, any news?
Yeah, there's something that came down on the Xbox Wire about an update in the end of September here, where they're going to be changing how Xbox stores game captures. And eventually it will start auto-deleting anything older than 90 days. And they've given a handy-dandy little tutorial on how you can transfer them to external storage or your OneDrive. And you'll be getting some options to help with that. You should see some notifications pop up, it sounds like. But something to keep an eye on. If you like some of your really old captures, you might want to back them up.
That is a shame. I wonder if it'll have any effect on the clips that have been imported to True Achievements.
Didn't say anything about clips, but I'll have to read more on this article. Again, it's on the Xbox Wire if you just want to look it up there. So, yeah.
Interesting.
I can post that link in the Discord.
It's a shame that they're going to delete stuff. I have, like, captures from the Xbox One launch still on my system. Or not on my system, but in my account that I could pull up on whatever and just watch.
Mm.
It sucks that they're going to get rid of them.
My only other news is personal.
What's that?
I reached 2 million gamer score last night on Xbox.
Ooh, nice.
Tell us about it. What happened?
Well, I did something that people do. I had never done it before. It's called preloading. It's where you play a game almost to completion and then stop. And I realized that since I had used the original Goat Simulator for my 1 million milestone and I got the billionaire achievement, I thought that Goat Sim 3 would be really great because the final like two achievements, one was called Try Hard 2. That's for getting all the trinkets. And then there's a Get All the Achievements achievement, which is called Goat. So I had some fun with that and, you know, mucked around and then someone had to point out, because I was so busy, you know, checking my numbers and looking at the big zeros, but apparently my reward for finishing the game to completion was that I got the magical ability to poop on everything as a goat. And so, yeah, I just ran around having fun with that for a while in celebration.
Just pooping with joy.
Just pooping with joy.
Nice. Yeah.
That's what I do on a Friday night.
That's what you do every night.
I don't always poop with joy. Usually it's just, you know, on Fridays. Other times, like, you know, I poop with Kyle, you know, then sometimes it's Miranda. You know, I got a bunch of friends that so I poop
joy
with.
Is only scheduled on Fridays. Is what
Fridays,
you're saying.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. That's good. Root Beer prod up some news. Apparently, South Park Pinball is coming back to Pinball FX on October 12th.
That's cool.
I don't believe they were in Pinball FX 3. I think they were in 2. I don't remember if they were in 3 or not, but they will be back. Their Super Sweet Pinball and Butter's Very Own Pinball will be available. I'm going to guess it'll be like $10 for the 2-pack, but I'll probably pick them up. I love those tables. I'm happy they're coming back.
I would totally buy those.
Jacob, any news on your end?
So I do, actually. Warhammer 40,000 Space Wolf is going to be delisted from the Xbox store soon. It's going to be delisted on October 11th, 2023. The dev has said that next week, so from October 3rd until October 9th, they will make it part of the Xbox sale. So it's going to come with a steep 90% discount.
Oh.
So instead of it costing $20, it'll cost you $2.50. So it's being delisted. Wait until October 3rd to pick it up.
That is okay. Very cool. Nice. That they're putting it on sale. I love when devs do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always appreciate that.
Cool.
That's all the news I got. That's all.
No movie watch or.
I mean, unless you want to count the fact that, you know, Gran Turismo is coming to, home video soon, or not home video.
But get your VHS copy of Gran Turismo.
That'd be great, actually.
On VHS and Laserdisc.
And Betamax.
Betamax, yes. Available Selectivision. At the local Blockbuster now.
If you want it in the good format, HD DVD will come in a few months.
But yeah, that's all I got.
All right. Well, should we dive into reviews? Because we got a bunch to talk about tonight.
Sure.
Yes.
Cool. Well, Bree, you're starting off so you could go do your own streaming thing. First game to talk about was Valtherian Arc High School Story 2, developed by Agate International, published by P-Cube, released September 15th on Xbox One and Series X and S for $19.99. Not all heroes are born. Many are forged by the finest hero school, yours. Take command of the faculty, nurture a unique and ever-growing roster of students, and earn your place among the most prestigious schools in the world of Valtheria. Bree, what is going on in Valtherian Arc High School Story 2?
That is a mouthful, isn't it? All right. So you are the new principal of Valtherian, or insert name here, Academy. You can actually change it to whatever you want. You meet up with your superintendent, one of your new students. They help you get through some slime monsters. You learn the basics of fighting, and then you get to your school and start your new job. Just like that. This is a management simulation fantasy RPG set slight strategy game. There's a little bit of some things going on. It blends together pretty well. The story comes
hold
in.
On. Hold on. Okay. Did you say slight strategy or flight strategy?
Slight.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Like, I was like, it says strategy in the thing, but I just the strategy part didn't come across quite as much to me, like as much as like the management simulation with the RPG side. So that's all I was saying. Slight.
Gotcha. Okay. Just making sure I heard.
All right, so there is a story that comes with this, even though it's, you know, really focused. The gameplay core is the management simulation with the RPG side. The story comes in these skits between your students and teachers and everybody at the beginning of each turn. And doing specific tasks on time helps progress that story along. The game is broken up into months and seasons as your primary turns. And I'm going to say turns a lot because the game really, it's very much turn-based, everything. There's turns. That's how this works. It's almost like a board game in that way. Like, you've got turns. Your main goal, functionally, is to do your principal tasks. And I mean that as because you are the principal, not because they are your principal tasks, but that works. And these tasks help you improve the academy, and they represent your duties to the school. I would say the gameplay kind of goes like, you have an overview of the school. You start out, you can assign classes, set your students to study or rest. You can build or improve the academy. You can go on errands. You can deal with diplomatic relations with the surrounding kingdoms. Following that, like kind of the end of your turn sequence, you can either go on a quest to an available area to keep down the monster population, or you can take a step towards the bigger plot when you're in that, or you can simply take a rest for the turn and then start over. After you progress through the tutorial phases, which is a good chunk of the, you know, first couple hours of the game is really just figuring out how this works, you start unlocking these different story vignettes at the beginning of each round. And then once per season, there's a mini game event that you get to participate in as well. So this all sounds kind of complicated. Once you get the flow of it, it's actually pretty decent. But you do need to balance a fair amount of things. You've got training costs, you've got tuition costs, you've got building costs, research, student learning, energy levels, monster slaying, and mini games. Let me talk about the mini games. The way it works is each season, so like you're broken up into the year, you get to graduate your students eventually after they've met certain requirements and different skill sets and you know, different plot levels and so on and so forth. The mini games are like a nice little way to kind of break down your year. They give you an event, like they have a fishing competition in the spring, they have a swimming competition in the summer, an eating contest at the autumn festival, and a snowman building contest in the winter. And I can say the only one of those that I actually enjoyed was the snowman building contest. I actually found the mini games, although they did offer a nice little break, thematically, seasons, you know, something kind of a little extra fun to do. I wish I could have just done them when I wanted to. And I ultimately found them to not be as fun as I thought they should be. They were kind of frustrating at times. They didn't really give you Like, the first time you go in, there's no instructions. It's just go. And then there's some, like, little instruction of what buttons you're supposed to press on the bottom of the screen, and you kind of figure it out. The good news is, though, you can retry as many times as you want until you get a win and figure it out. It's very trial and error that way, but that's good because you really want to win all of them for achievements and rewards. And I appreciate the fact that
the Xbox store has an image of the snowman building contest.
Yeah.
With WASD instead of arrows.
Of course. Or of buttons. Course. Yeah. One of the features actually in the game that I thought was really cool is that when you get an achievement, you can claim them in the game itself, and that will net you different resources, money, arc stones. Cool. And that sort of thing. So you have to, that's like an extra little layer, which is really helpful because you need a lot of resources to keep your academy running. You do get stuff from doing quests. But like every time you want to train a student, it costs money. Anytime you want to build a building or upgrade a building, it costs money. You lose a certain amount every time a month rolls over or a season rolls over or a year rolls over to upkeep certain things and so on. The quests you go on do get you some money, but also some of your diplomatic stuff. You can't be everywhere at once. You don't have enough students at the beginning. So in order to keep these different factions or kingdoms happy, sometimes you just have to throw them money so that they can hire mercenaries to solve their monster problems since you don't have enough students yet. And so money is just like something you need to get everywhere because you also need like the prestige level so you can upgrade the academy and get more amenities for your students over time. So yeah, that's kind of how the game works. The story was really good. I'll say I kind of broke the rest of this down into like good things, bad things notes. So very cute art, interesting character writing. I really engaged with the characters when I got to these little story sections. Some of the fighting sections, when you go out into the world, I really enjoyed that little kind of turn-based combat RPG, you know, standard fare, and you go out and you fight slime monsters, and then, you know, it gets a little bit bigger, and you find these ambicorns, and they're this, like, big behemoths with, you know, unicorn horns, but they otherwise look like, I don't know, mammoths or something. And you know, that stuff was fun. I really liked that aspect, getting to my turn, but you don't get to do the fighting every turn, because you've got to actually, like, rest and rejuvenate your students. It had a light and fun fantasy soundtrack, nothing like super amazing, but it was pretty good. And I will say, once you learn the ins and outs of the game, it gets to be a really nice balance of the action, the management, and the story. So if you like any of those aspects of the management simulation RPG enough that you can, you know, put up with another one you might not like as much, it does get to be a good balance. But the bad stuff is that the learning curve's a bit rough. There is a surprising lack of instruction for there being so long a tutorial phase of the game. Like I mentioned, just something as simple as the mini games didn't have a lot of instruction. It was really just like, figure it out. There were some buttons that didn't seem to work when I thought they should. I felt like I should have been able to tab between windows and I just couldn't. There was a point where on my principal task bar, it didn't screen wrap, and I just couldn't read what the task was. I was just supposed to figure that out, too. So the learning curve just was such a detractor in the beginning of the game. It made it really hard to get into. But once I got over that hump, it got to be really fun getting through, getting in there, and like really kind of the game starts to open up as you get a little bit further. The other thing that was kind of weird, and I'm not sure what it is about the game because it didn't seem like it was that resource intensive, but my fans were running on like full high the whole time the game is on. I don't know really? Why. Yeah, it was very weird. Like, I don't even think I have, you know, games like Cyberpunk, like, ran my fans that much. It was kind of weird.
It doesn't look like a very graphically intensive game, so
I don't know if that comes from the management side, but again, I don't even feel like there's that much going on at the earlier stages of the game that it should have warranted that. And it's like, game turns on, fans turn on. It's not even like an hour into the game. It's like right as the game starts up, pretty much the fans go on. So I don't know if that's like a weird bug in the coding that somehow just like encourages it to do that or what, but that was weird.
I have to look into that. I will mention that in the email when I send in our coverage. But the game clocks in at $20. What are your thoughts on Valtherian Arc 2?
So I would say the price feels right for the amount of content, first of all. Second of all, if you're a fan of the style of game, if you played the original, which I did not, you know, this probably would have some welcome improvements, some nods to the original game. It might be something that, you know, you could absolutely say is a buy. For me, because I was so frustrated in the beginning of the game, I'm going to kind of put it at a, like, at least try it, leaning toward buy it. Because, again, I feel like there's a lot of good stuff going for it. It's just, I was so frustrated in the beginning. It was hard for me to really get into it. And I'm looking forward to, like, getting to the you know, rest of the game where I can just, like, ease into more and more and more and see how long I can keep my academy going. But, yeah, so it's kind of in that middle zone for me.
Cool, sounds good. Next up is After Dream, developed by Jesse McConan, published by Feardemic, released September 28th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $10.99. Get lost in a lucid dream, bending the lines between reality and fiction. Utilize the strange camera to navigate through the ghost's mysterious residence. Find the purpose of your nocturnal visit in a vivid and dreamlike setting. Bree, what is After Dream?
All right, so we start out telling our therapists about our strange dreams. All the while, there's tension building with this barely audible ambient tone and a loudly ticking grandfather clock. The lightning flickers, and you can see the rain coming down through the windows in the background. And our dream feels a little too real, we admit. The sights, the sounds were a little too real, and we close our eyes to remember more clearly. And then we are transported into the memory of our dream, and that is the game's POV. And it starts with the line, "So I got up from the maggot-eaten bed."
But sexy.
I know, right? But this is kind of you know, interesting coming from Feardemic, which is I think a new publisher to consoles for them. And I am familiar with Jesse McConan's earlier works that have come to console, the Distraint series and Heal. And there's definitely some similarities. We get like that typical vibe that I'm familiar with from previous works. This landscape of a confusing, dilapidated building. I can't even say the word. peeling wallpaper, cracked plaster, marred floors, stained carpets. You know, this kind of stereotypical like horror scene. But I would not classify this as like real horror. And I'll get back to that thought in a bit. We have this 2D scrolling adventure environment, two and a half D kind of, because you do have like doors on the front side. There's like a transparent wall face that, you know, you can kind of move in and out of and get through doors. And this is, again, this is what the developer has done with previous stuff. You get some puzzles to solve, and after a few introductory puzzles to kind of get you to know what's going on in the world, we get a camera. And that is a huge function of the game. When you look through the lens and take snapshots, you find that the world has changed. You can bring objects into focus and into our world, or we can make them disappear, depending on the scenario. We meet a strange man who identifies us as the camera operator, which is, you know, ooh, the camera operator. And so the game starts out with these just very like quirky cast of characters that you run into, and you're really just trying to figure out the mystery of what's going on. But what the game ultimately starts to become about, what you start to realize, is that it's about difficult emotions, grief and loss, existential crises, and that's the sort of stuff that you'll see in McKinnon's other games. We meet a ghost who explains that we are in a kind of halfway point between life and the afterlife, and we're not really dreaming. Someone we recently lost is in this place, and they're trying to reach us. And if we can open this portal, it'll help the ghosts, and we would get to see this person. The ghosts here can't use the camera to find this thing called a portal stone, and that's where we come into play. But things aren't always what they seem in this place. Most of the game.
Don't say.
I know. Most of the game has us asking, was it all a dream, or is this really this afterlife experience? So back to my earlier comment about this, it has horror elements, but I would really say this is more creepy than it is like true horror, because again, this is about grief, and grief is a weird horror show that hits you at unexpected times. It has no linear path to recovery, and it will make your whole world seem strange and out of place. I have some personal experience here recently with all of that, And much like the camera, you have to rely on the memory of things to bring into focus. So this really felt like an allegory for all of that. And I can say I really appreciated the narrative from that perspective. You know, there were characters that tie in from earlier parts of the game and the real world to this afterlife world. And it's got a really big payoff at the end. And you're really rewarded well for exploring the game completely. I legit cried at the end of the story. It did hit me in a very personal way. Again, still processing my own grief over my father, very similar to the character in the game. So, you know, it's another layer. If you like having, you know, some of those emotions, the, you know, presented in a game, I actually am going to put this on a list that I keep about mental health and disability games that represent certain things well. As I actually have put previous games of his on that list, because I think there's something that Jesse Mackinnon does so well in helping express things. Heal, an earlier game, was about someone dealing with like dementia or Alzheimer's or something, where they're starting to kind of lose their ability to understand things and process things. And that's kind of, you know, dealt with through these puzzles, and you see things disappear, you know. So this is very much that same kind of story, but done, you know, differently to this particular aspect of storytelling, this particular aspect of grief and that sort of thing. So I will say I ended up, to go back and clean achievements, I ended up doing a replay of part of the game, and the puzzle solutions are actually randomized, which was pretty cool. Not that necessarily is going to give you a ton of replay value, but yeah.
I would say, like, replay value in this, or is it like a one and done kind of deal?
I feel like it might be a one and done thing. It really depends on your connection to it, or if you feel like you didn't explore a lot in the beginning, because there are some really cool little finds. And again, if you want to emotionally connect with the story, there's a lot there that I think you can do with that. But I don't know that that's something that I am going to go back all the time and want to revisit, because they are some dark emotions and some deep stuff that, like, again, I cried because I was like, ooh, okay, yep. That's totally what I was feeling when I went through that. So, but they are randomized, which, you know, is something that I think is a good aspect. So,
well, yeah. The game clocks in at $10.99. What are your thoughts on that?
Easy buy. It's a relatively short experience. It is a really good packed experience. Again, you know, you can kind of, you know, run your way through it. I would hate to see people do that, but I think it's a good price for the amount of content. And again, I love the landscapes that this developer creates, and the way that they represent the different, you know, emotional turmoil and the struggles in the different characters, and help bring to light the ways that people process these deep emotions in game form. So, yeah.
Cool. Sounds good. All right, Bree, that is it for you. We won't let you get going, so you could get to your stream tonight. What's on your plate tonight?
I think we are going to try some party animals.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm gonna dive right in. Yeah, so that's the plan. I'm gonna go grab my friends and see if we can make that happen.
I played that with ID earlier, and it was a really fun time with friends.
Yeah,
playing by yourself, it's not as good, but with friends, it's a pretty solid laugh. So
yeah, that's what I'm hoping is gonna happen, and we'll do that as long as it's fun. So yeah,
cool.
So 5 minutes.
Yeah. But yeah,
ouch,
we'll see you guys later.
Have yourself good a good one.
See ya.
All right, moving on. Next game to talk about is Lies of P, developed by Round 8 Studio and NeoWiz, published by NeoWiz, released September 18th on Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4, PS5, and PC for $59.99. Lies of P is a thrilling Souls-like that takes the story of Pinocchio, turns it on its head, and sets it against the darkly elegant backdrop of the Belle Epoque era. Aki, what is going on in Lies of P?
Okay. This is Pinocchio, but if Pinocchio was a badass. This is a Neo-like game. Lots of people are probably going to call this a Soulsborne, but those mostly revolve around dodging. This revolves around blocking shit perfectly or taking damage and dying like a bitch, which I don't like. You might be able to guess how well I do at blocking things perfectly. So in this, you play as Pinocchio. You're awakened in a train by the mysterious blue fairy voice. And you go and start killing robots that have gone batshit insane and started killing people. Who knows why? You just know you need to get to Hotel Krantz, I think is how it's pronounced. Why? Because that's the hub world. You need to get there. You need to get to your hub so you can go other places. Throughout this, you get to fight some things that are clearly inspired from the book or movie, whichever you want to go off of. For instance, there's a mini boss called the Mad Donkey, which is a reference towards the fact that people turned into jackasses in the book and movie, which was really cool to see stuff like that. You get a bunch of stats you can level up, as per always. You have a couple different abilities that you can level up that are specifically for what kind of weapon combat style you have. There's Mavity, I think, was one technique, and I don't remember the last one, but Mavity is for, you know, is your strength stat, basically, for all the really heavy duty weapons, you know, the giant swords that make you look like a child in comparison. Technique is for all your dexterity needs for when you want to use like rapiers and shit. And the other one is basically your special weapon abilities. So some weapons have a natural ability that they're on fire or they're electric, stuff like that. It's for the extra damage type, more or less. Then you have your usual stats like your vitality, which is how much health you have, your capacity, which is how much shit you can carry, which is very important. Because if you, this has three levels of stuff you can carry. Normal, slightly heavy when you go above 60% of your max capacity, which slows you down just a little bit, not a lot, thankfully. And then really heavy where you've gone over 80% and you're basically fucked at that point. And then I guess you can get to 100% where you're completely fucked and you barely walk at that point. Don't get that high, folks. That's just a bad idea. Like you can't
tell me what to do. I'll get as high as I want to.
Yeah, you can't even jump when you have 100%. It's really funny. Not that you can jump very well anyways, but yeah. So instead of souls, you get ergos when you defeat enemies, be it robots or the occasional human or other things that I'm not going to mention. And instead of a bonfire, you have stargazers, which are some random fucking thing. I don't actually know what they're supposed to be. In this, you fight a whole bunch of bosses in different areas. Each area is basically treated like its own chapter. Usually it has a couple mid-bosses and then a main boss. At the main boss door, you're able to use a special item to summon an NPC to help you fight it. That is the only way I've been able to beat literally any of these bosses, because I am fucking terrible at this game.
Jeez.
Yeah, there's no accessibility features when it comes to making this easier for you, so either you suck at it, or you suck a lot less at it. There's not really a, you're good at this.
At least there's a way to get someone to help you in this. I remember Woe Long, like, I just recently reinstalled it to see if I could now, after how long, and all the updates and all the balances, if I could beat the intro boss or not. I'm going to find that out this weekend.
Well, if you can, let me know, because I might Well, I might move it back over to my system and see if I can beat the Lubu, which is considered the wall of the game. And he's not at the end of the game. I think he's like a chapter 5 or chapter 8 boss, something like that. And they're like, Lord. Yeah, if you're going to get stuck, it's going to be here. And you're going to get real stuck. If you can't beat this boss, you're not going to beat the game or have any hope.
A wall like that in this?
Yes, I've hit it. And I've spent two entire days trying to beat this boss and a part of a third, and I've come close, like, 2 out of, I don't know, 40, 50 times. yeah, I hit a boss that's called the Black Rabbit. It's a human boss, because there are some of those, and basically it's 4 people that fight you. Yeah, there's this big guy who basically acts like Guts from Berserk. So he has a big fuck off sword. He's heavily armored and he just zips around the field faster than I do, even though I'm a dex based character, so I should be running real fast. And every time you get him down, like by like a quarter or one third of his health, one of his friends basically jumps in and helps him fight. So you have to fight both of them at the same time. If you beat the friend fucks off, and then you can just focus on him until the next one comes in. If you decide just to focus on him, more and more of his friends show up.
Oh man,
yeah,
sounds tough.
Yeah, as I said, I've gotten close to beating him 2 times out of at least 50, probably significantly more than that. I've not beat him. He sucks. All 4 of them are real fast, hit real hard, and they zip around. I'm like, you motherfuckers. There has
tough,
been some
but
patches.
Is it fun?
Yes, I've thoroughly enjoyed it. The game, I don't think, has as high of a ceiling for, you know, you have to get quite as good as, let's say, like Dark Souls and Bloodborne stuff, where you have to really, really pay a lot of attention. You can, there's no stats for your weapons, for instance, like requirement stats. So you don't need like 20 mobility or whatever it is in order to equip this weapon. You just equip it when you get it. And the higher that stat is, the more damage you do with it, but you can equip it immediately. Which is nice, because it means the best weapon you could effectively still equip with no points in that skill. It just won't be as strong. The only drawback about this is there are soft caps, like there always is in games like this, and they're not very, very high. So, like, for your attack stats, any of the 3 of them, like 35 is generally the highest amount of points you want to put into that, because after that the diminishing returns are so low there's not a point to it. By the time you hit 40 in that stat, you're now getting 0 or 1 added to it every time you level permanently, so it's very low. Whereas some other stats like capacity stays up really high, thankfully. It's easier to get into. And I don't think as many of the bosses are that bad. And the NPC that you can summon, I believe they equip just whatever your strongest weapon is that you don't have equipped, which means they do get stronger when you're fighting bosses. However, that's the only thing that gets better for them. So their defense doesn't get better. Their hit points don't get better. They don't get faster. Nothing. They just hit a little harder, which means they die pretty fucking quick, because I think they only have like 700 hit points. The bosses have thousands, I would venture a guess, and I have probably more than twice what the NPC has as well, and it's just like, it is good for taking a lot of hits, though, and it dishes out some good damage as long as you have decent weapons, so that's really nice. It is very helpful. I would like to be able to maybe summon actual players who are better than me, though, because they could carry me through some of this. But, you know, hey, maybe that might be an update in the future. They are still putting out patches for it to try and figure out where enemies' strengths really should be. Like, a number of bosses in the past, I believe, two patches that have come out have been nerfed in damage, whereas some other things have been heightened. Ergo, amounts for fighting have increased, especially from bosses, so you get more points towards leveling up when you beat bosses. But for instance, with the most current update, sadly, one of the worst things, at least for me, is the item that you get that you are required to have and expend in order to summon the NPC, its drop rate decreased, which made me very unhappy because I need that. Because I might use like 10 or 12 of those in a boss battle before I finally win, if I'm lucky. Yeah, I'm not good at these games, but it's so fun to do. I really like the environment and the atmosphere, and Pinocchio is adorable. I absolutely love him. He's so cute. And you can dress him up in different outfits you find. They don't give you any benefits or anything, but they look really cool. Yeah, I really like this game. It's been really fun. I'll probably keep playing it as long as I can keep it installed anyways.
Nice. Well, it clocks in at $60. What's your thoughts on Lies of P?
I think it's definitely worth buying, especially if you like games like Nioh and Dark Souls and stuff. Just don't expect to be, you know, dodge rolling around because you're going to get hit and it's still going to hurt you.
Cool. Sounds good.
Yep.
Moving on, next game is Resident Evil 4 Separate Ways DLC, developed and published by Capcom, released September 21st as DLC for Resident Evil 4 Remake for $9.99. The mission called for utmost secrecy. Failure was not an option. Before any U.S. agent had even set foot in the cursed village, she was there. Her mission, the retrieval of the cult's darkest secret, the Amber. Aki, what is going on in the Separate Ways DLC for Resident Evil 4?
You play as the always sexy Ada Wong.
how did I know that's how this was going to start?
Because it obviously was, because she's fucking gorgeous. This is basically her side of the story during the main game, and slightly before it. You are sent out by a certain glasses-wearing asshole to find this amber and bring it back to a certain evil organization. You can put two and two together with that. Throughout this, you fight mostly the same types of enemies that you do in the main game. You do get, I believe, one enemy that you don't find in the main game that you get to fight, which is nice. You will recognize it from the original Resident Evil 4 as someone from the main game, but not from the remake. They took it out. So that's cool, too. Otherwise, everywhere you're visiting is still, I believe, the exact same locations. You do visit them in different ways. For instance, one of the areas you start is at the castle where... in the main game, they have all the catapults shooting at Ashley and Leon. You start there in separate ways before that happens. So you get to see the place when it's not quite as filled with assholes. It's kind of funny, though, because you can do things that basically would screw up the timeline of what's actually happening in the game. Again, in that first area, the catapults can be activated and you can destroy them, which is what you'd have to do in the main game too. So they kind of screw with stuff a little bit like that, but nothing major. Otherwise, every time you see Ada helping Leon throughout the main game, you see her side of it. So, you know, every time she usually calls him and says, "Hey, you might want to check here," you actually play an area around then and see her actually contact him, which is kind of interesting to me. And that includes all the way up to the final fight where you have to go and find the rocket launcher to give to Leon, which was stressful. Very stressful, actually, because it was...
You keep cutting out when you're talking.
Oh, weird. Everything's plugged in. Am I doing any better now?
Yeah, it sounds fine. I don't know. It was probably just some weird hiccup. Discord's being wonderful tonight, so. Woohoo! What were you saying about RE4? Let's get back to this.
Yeah, I don't know where I cut out, so. I don't know.
We're both really good at our jobs that we don't remember what we're doing.
Well, I knew what I was saying, but I don't know where it cut off, so that doesn't help me get back to what I was saying. You basically see everything from her side. You get to see her interact with Leon in all the times that you, as Leon, hear her interact. You get to play around that section of the game and see her actually contact him, which is really cool. So you know where she is in relation to everything that's going down. And she has her own set of weapons that are different from Leon's, which is pretty cool. You get one special ability that I thoroughly enjoyed. You get the grappling hook gun that Ada has. And it's not just used for grappling up to higher places. You can use it in combat, which is so fun. For instance, if you stagger an enemy or get them to, you know, go down to their knees where they belong, if you're far away, you can still grapple onto them and go into the melee attack. Whereas, you know, with Leon, you'd have to run up to them to do that special melee attack. So that's really cool. There's also, if you get certain upgrades or something, you can pull shields away from enemies, so you don't have to destroy the shield, which is super useful, because there are a lot of shielded jackasses in Ada's story. So, yeah. The only really sad thing is her weapons are generally significantly weaker. So you have to fight some bosses, and it becomes kind of difficult. For instance, you know, the big giant guys that are in the game, you have to fight one of those as Ada. She doesn't have any particularly strong weapons, so that fight is very difficult. But otherwise, it's pretty fun. I thoroughly enjoyed my time. I really like Ada as a character. I especially like her new design that was given to her in the remake. I think it's very cute, and I very much like it. And after you beat the game the first time, you unlock other outfits for her, including her original RE4 styled outfit, if you want her in that dress. So have fun, guys. You bunch of perverts.
Well, the DLC clocks in at $10. What are your thoughts on it?
Oh, hell yes. For $10, yes. I think my first playthrough took me like 9 hours. You can beat it in like 2. Because there's something for doing that. But yeah, you're definitely going to get your time's worth. And after you beat it once, you can replay her in skimpier outfit. So have fun.
Cool, cool. All right, next up, Super Bomberman R2, developed and published by Konami Digital Entertainment. Released September 13th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $49.99. The latest title of the Party Battle game series, Super Bomberman R, with new adventures and game modes, has the largest content volume in the series history. The game features not only offline battles that can be played with family and friends, but also online battles that connect players from all over the world, as well as a single-player mode. Jacob, tell us about your time with Super Bomberman R2.
So Super Bomberman R2 is pretty interesting. Like, there's two very specific modes for it. The first one is the storyline mode, where the Bomberman family group, I don't know what you want to call them, like, they seem like kind of almost like the Partridge Family, except minus songs, they throw bombs. But anyways, you're traveling in the galaxy, you land on this planet, and you find that there's these little blue guys who are being harassed, and you need to save them all. And you're allowed to carry up to 5 of them at a time. And I don't remember exactly what the point of them was, other than like you're just supposed to collect them. Like, I don't recall if like they make your attack stronger or anything like that. But they follow you around. They're adorable. And as I said, you're allowed five up to a time. So if you collect like a 6-1, it gets sent back to your home base. And you're just supposed to collect as many of them as you can and also defeat the bad guys, which is a lot of robots that are just like wandering around. And it's a lot of picking up on what their like what their movements are going to be, because most of them just move in like simple squares and stuff like that. However, eventually there starts being other hazards involved, and it's just, that part's pretty fun. Like, I didn't think the voice acting was like that great, but also, I mean, I don't know anybody who's ever like gotten into Bomberman just because of the voice acting.
And
that being said, there is an online portion of it, and the online was pretty fun all in all. It was a little unexpected. Now, naturally, you can play regular Bomberman online against everybody, and it's just you just trying to kill everyone else. But there's also, I don't want to call it asymmetrical, because like that's, you know, like that seems to be like the thing right now. But there's this online mode in it where one person gets to be like the overlord of the map, and they could set up like all of these different traps. And like what it, essentially it is that it's like one versus, I think it was like 16 or 24, somewhere around there. And the one person is sitting up in like their little castle with all their traps and all their various weapons that they can use against the bomber people. And everyone else just like has to swarm the area and collect all these different things. And it's like, you have to collect keys and you have to collect this device. And like, once you can do all that, you can storm into their little castle area and fort, whatever you want to call it, and go after them and hopefully win the game. We did it a couple of times, but like, it was other people getting it done for me, because usually I'd end up like getting killed by somebody else's bomb. And also on a couple of rare occasions, I'd get killed by my own bombs.
Proud of you. Proud of you.
Which, thank you. Thank you. But yeah, so I wasn't exactly sure what was going on, but I was still having plenty of fun with it. It's a pretty fun game, and as you play, like, even if you lose, like, you still collect experience points, and the experience points allowed you to unlock various stuff for your Bomberman character, whether it's music, intro animations. You can also buy skins, which I'm a big fan of, because there is a Pyramid Head skin that you can buy, because if you recall, Bomberman's made by Konami, so they have skins for a lot of different Konami series. So there's is some Castlevania, some Silent Hill, and there were a couple of other series that I wasn't familiar with. I don't know if they're Japan exclusive or what, series, or maybe they're just like further down in there. Oddly enough, nothing harkening back to Bomberman X-Zero. Weird.
Shocker.
mind-blowing
shocker that they did not acknowledge that one.
Yeah, I know, very strange. But yeah, it's just it's a pretty fun bomber game or Bomberman game. It's fast, it's furious, like, you know, and it's a lot of fun, to be honest. I was pleasantly surprised by it. So
I'm kind of annoyed with how the online works. Like, I wish I could just pick what mode I want to play and queue up for a game of that. Instead, it just seems to all be quick play, where it's all randomized, and whatever game you land in, you land in.
Well, I mean, you could set up, I thought you could set up private rooms, though, if you want.
That's private, though. I don't want to, like, I don't have 64 friends to play a Battle 64 and make it a private match.
Why not, Joe?
Because I don't have friends.
That's... Get good, Scrub.
Can't.
I don't know if that really applies on that one. I mean, I get that. I don't know. I don't delve that much into Bomberman, so I was pretty pleased with what I was playing, as somebody who rarely ever picks up any of those titles.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I liked it.
Well, the game clocks in at $50. What is your verdict on Super Bomberman R2?
if you're a fan of the Bomberman series, I think you'll be pleased with it. If you're a newbie, you may want to wait for a sale on it, but it does take the time to hold your hand and explain how everything works with the tutorial in the game. So, you know, if you are a newbie and you still want to explore it, it's not just like going to toss you into everything and, you know, hope for the best. So, I mean, I'd recommend it for $50.
Cool. Up next, Operation Wolf Returns, first mission developed by Virtualease Gaming, published by Microids, released September 22nd on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $29.99. A few months ago, a new criminal organization made its appearance. In addition to trafficking arms and drugs, has developed a new super powerful weapon after discovering several of the bases of the organization led by the mysterious General Viper. Two agents are dispatched to learn more about this weapon and free the hostages held in the surrounding camps. Jacob, we talked about this one on PSVR a few weeks ago. It is now on flat screen on flat gaming with all platforms. What are your thoughts on Operation Wolf Returns first mission?
So Operation Wolf Returns first mission plays out very similarly to the House of the Dead remake that got released, I think it was last year, for the Xbox. And with that one, or sorry, with this one, you're using the left stick to aim where your gun's going to fire, right trigger to fire your gun. I think X is reload, and you can switch weapons with the directional buttons. There might be a couple of other things I'm leaving out, but it tries to go with the arcade experience. And yeah, like it's a standard 90, like this came out back in 87 though, didn't it?
Thought the original,
it's old.
God, I don't know.
I thought I might be confusing. It with yeah. Something released else.
As an arcade game in 87.
Okay. So it definitely tries to do an update for that kind of light gun, thing, and it plays out very similarly to the ones that you'd see in the 90s, where it's like, you know, you're hiding behind stuff, you know, you step on the pad to get out of cover, you know, shoot off screen to reload, that kind of stuff. And so with this one, you know, it's as Joe said in the description, you know, you're like some super agent tasked with taking down General Viper, and you have to go through a bunch of different levels. You know, some of them are like, you know, third world villages, some of them are naval bases, like there's an airport runway that you have to go down, and you're on rails like the whole time. You can't decide where you're gonna be, like where you're gonna be moving to, although there are certain points where you can decide which road you're gonna take. All it just really determines is like who you're gonna be able to shoot and stuff like that. Along with the genre mainstays, you also have to rescue hostages, which are either being held, you know, hostage by somebody like with a gun to the back of their head, and so you have to shoot the bad guy, or they're being kept in like, you know, like some sort of a box or a container, and those you'll be able to hear, and you're supposed to be able to see like where they're like yelling help, help, like you'll see like word bubbles with that. However, honestly, like half the time I don't know where they're coming from. You could hear like the people yelling, but it's just, you just end up shooting at boxes and hoping for the best, which honestly I found a tad bit frustrating. Another thing I found frustrating is that sometimes enemies would be hiding behind like the sliver of a door, and it's just, you just have to shoot at the door and hope that the game would register for a hit. Like they weren't hitting me. I couldn't see them, you know, it's just, you know, spray and pray. And it's a pretty entertaining experience, I've got to say, especially I was playing it on like the easiest mode. I don't remember if it was exactly called easy or if it was called normal. But yeah, you're just going through all the levels. Like when you run out of life or med kits, you know, the general comes in and is like, oh, you're going to finish this mission? You can decide whether you're going to. And it will affect your score at the end, because the score does tell you, like, how many time, like, how many credits you had to waste to get to the end of the stage. But, yeah, all in all, it's a pretty fun game. Like, it's very much like the House of the Dead remake. Honestly, I'd rather be playing this with a light gun in my hand or, like, the VR headset and the instruments to, like, get that kind of gun feel.
Yeah, because I feel VR like that was would pretty work fun with this game.
Yeah, like, and the thing is, like, it's not that this isn't fun, but like, you really are gonna have to finagle with the sensitivity so you could get that quick shots going, because yeah, otherwise your crosshairs move a little too slow. So I mean, with some finagling, it'll be better. I still wish that there was something I could be doing about, like, those enemies that you just can't straight up see, and you just have to hope for the best, like, this is where it's supposed to be firing.
No.
But all in all, like, this is an excellent welcome addition to the Xbox library.
Well, it's on everything, so.
Well, whatever. I played it for Xbox, so I'm welcoming
30 to the bucks, Xbox what's your library. Verdict?
$30 is solid for this title. I'm not going to be recommending it to, like, every single person out there, but, like, if you're a fan of these kind of games, like the old, like, an arcade experience, definitely pick it up. It's a fun time to be had, and yeah, like, I can't wait to force my wife to have to play co-op with me on this, so, you know, I could get those achievements.
She's going to punch you.
Yeah, next probably.
Next up, Rise of the Triad, Ludicrous Edition, developed and published by Night Dive Studios, Apogee Software, and New Blood Interactive. Released September 28th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5 for $19.99. When cultists target Los Angeles for destruction, only the high-risk United Nations Task Force, codenamed Hunt, can end their reign of terror. Gear up and load out as one of five elite operatives, each with their own attributes, and infiltrate the cult monastery to stop the nefarious plans. Jacob, what is going on in Rise of the Triad Ludicrous Edition?
So, Rise of the Triad is an older first-person shooter game. I think it's from like 94, 95, thereabouts. So, it has Doom or Wolfenstein-esque graphics from that time period, so don't go in there expecting, like, you know, like the latest, like, Call of Duty graphics. Like, get all that kind of, you know, imagery out of your head. Like, this is going to be old school. And you are allowed to play as one of five players, or one of five characters in the game, you know, these various members of Hunt, like the organization that they're called. And really, all it really boils down to is, like, how various aspects for the characters are measured out, like hit points, rate of fire, like how quickly they move, that kind of stuff. And so you just have to pick one of your characters, like whoever you want to be as, that'll suit your play style and go at it. You are going to need to look at the game menu to figure out, like, what exactly the controls are, because the game won't tell you that in itself. Keep in mind, again, this is an older game. And so as you're going through all the levels, a lot of it is going through shooting all the bad guys, picking up keys. There are occasional, like, puzzles of, like, how do you get from point A to point B kind of stuff, but there's not that many of them. The physics are kind of interesting. Like, they have these, like, little staircases that will either shoot you up to, like, a certain height because you're supposed to be collecting stuff, or, like, you can use the staircases almost kind of like jump pads, like, to get to higher areas. So you can see, like, what's going on. You know, sometimes there's stuff to collect, sometimes there it's like gives you an interesting vantage point to kill enemies. And it's just like, it's a lot of, like, you know, it's getting to, you just have to find the exit and just keep moving forward, as was very common for a lot of these types of games. It's the thing is, like, in my opinion, it's not setting the world on fire. but it's a solid first-person shooter game. Like, I was enjoying what I was playing because I was also unfamiliar with this game. And that's part of Night Dive's bread and butter, just bringing back all of, like, those forgotten shooters from the mid-90s, you know, that got, just got lost in the shuffle.
Originally.
Yeah, it's somewhere around there. Originally, like, I was reading up on the history. Apparently, this was supposed to be the sequel to Wolfenstein, and then, like, they changed their minds and then just made it its a separate standalone game.
Nifty.
But yeah, like, it's a solid title to check out. Like, I was having a good time with it. Like, I wish the game explained itself a little bit more, but again, this was also 1993. Like, it's not like, you know, it's built differently than the shooters that we get today. So, you know, just go in there knowing that and have a great time.
Cool. Well, it's $20 and actually at totally least on Xbox it. For the next 2 weeks. It's on sale for $15.99. What are your thoughts?
Absolutely. Like, I recommend anything that so far I have yet to be disappointed by anything that that this studio has taken the care to do a remaster of to get it out there. Like, I've been pretty pleased with everything. And with that for $20, yeah, totally. Like, that's what we were paying for it back in, like, 95. Cough up the $20 and have a good time.
Cool. Next game is Cocoon, developed by Geometric Interactive, published by Annapurna Interactive, released September 29th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $24.99. Cocoon is a unique take on the puzzle adventure genre where each world exists within an orb that you carry on your back. Wrap your head around the core mechanics of leaping between worlds and combine, manipulate, and rearrange them to solve intricate puzzles. Aki, what is Cocoon?
Cocoon is a mindfuck. That is the basis of this game. It's very Kafka-esque. Everything in it is these weird bug-like creatures. For instance, you play this beetle or cockroach type person thing, something, and you're collecting these giant worlds, basically, that are effectively marbles. And you're carrying them around different environments, and you can place them in things to power up machines. As well as there are some machines you can place them in that basically open up that world so you can jump into it, where you will sometimes find other worlds that you can pull out of it or put into it in order to open things in it or in order to go deeper into the rabbit hole because it's a mindfuck game. I just managed to beat this game today and the entire end of it was so confusing. So throughout this, it is mostly a puzzle game in so much that you have to figure out how to get through an area by placing things in different areas and just figuring out how to get through a level. It's not like, oh, let's grab this object, put it here, and that opens this pathway so we can grab this other object. No, it's just the marbles that open up everything. You just have to figure out how to get around the landscape in such a way to get to the end of it properly. As you play through the levels, each one of these worlds also gets an ability when you're not in it. So when you're holding that marble, that allow you to traverse the world in different ways. For instance, there's only four of these marbles, maybe five. Four, I think, that you get throughout the game. The first one is a red one that when you get its special ability, it basically allows you to walk over pathways that otherwise you weren't able to see or interact with. They don't exist everywhere, and you very quickly figure out exactly how to tell, oh, that's one of these pathways. I need the red ball in my hand in order to go through these. You know, another one allows you to shoot things in order to cause platforms and stuff to move and so on and so forth. So each one just has its own little special ability that you can use to help solve future pathway problems. which are interesting. And throughout this, you do occasionally reach boss battles in each world. There's no way for your character to die. If the boss hits you, they pick you up and throw you generally out of the arena, and then you have to go back into it and retry it from the beginning. Otherwise, you kick the shit out of them in one way or another. It's usually you do it with whatever the next ability is going to end up being, or the current ability that you have is. So, for like the shooting one, you shoot things to beat the boss. So, yeah. The game took me probably 10-ish hours, maybe, give or take. It was very confusing, and especially later on when you have all, well, three or four of the marbles, because you have to bring them into each other and use them in certain areas, and you might end up bringing, like, two of them into one of them, and then one of them that you brought in, you put into the other one, so it's now three levels deep, and it gets very confusing, because you have to set things up, because other things can go into these worlds than just you. For instance, like, if you have the shooty one, you can aim it to shoot things into one of the balls, and then that bullet will travel in that world. So you might have to set up a whole bunch of these multiple layers deep to hit something, to go through multiple of these worlds in order to hit something, so it's timed to activate things in the current world with a long enough time period between them that you can get where you need to be in between the shots. It is so confusing when you get to later games. So confusing. I loved every second I played this game, but there are so many times where I was like, okay, that didn't work. I don't know why. So let me just fiddle with things for the next like 20, 30, 40 minutes until I just happened to get it right. And I still don't know why it worked. But it worked, and that's what really matters.
So you're saying you spend 20 minutes at a time fiddling with balls?
With marbles, yes. Probably closer to 40 minutes. Yeah,
nice.
It's fantastic. I thoroughly enjoyed my time with this. I will have to replay it because there are collectibles that you can get. Basically, you occasionally find these what seem to be hollow husks of other weird insectoid like creatures, and if you use an ability near them, basically praying to them or something, they reactivate and then fly off, and there's, I don't know, 10-15 of them or something, and each one of them has an achievement, and I missed three.
Proud of you.
Yeah, thankfully this game has both a continue and a load game, and when you click load game, it's not a save that it gives you. Instead, it's you can pick any area that you have played that you can just go to and just quickly resume the game from that area. So basically it's a chapter replay, and there is a ton of places for you. So yeah, it auto saves on a pretty regular basis as well. So if, you know, your internet goes out or your system crashes or whatever, you're not going to miss very much. That's so good. Yeah, it's pretty awesome. The only drawback to that is you can go into areas and then you can't get out of them, and it will have already auto saved, which makes it hard to go back. You can't revisit a bunch of places in this game. Once you get past certain areas, you don't go back, and it doesn't tell you about those areas, because it's like every
you've already cleared it, like, and gotten everything that you need, right?
Unless you missed one of the collectible things. Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, so like, it's not going to make it so you can't ever return to areas where you didn't get a collectible, right?
You can replay the game or go through loading load game option, which gives you the ability to replay areas. You can do that, but you can't go backwards areas to recollect stuff.
Okay, I don't think I was completely understanding what you were saying at first. Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of like if you go out of this building and there was a collectible in the building, you can't go back into the building anymore unless you go and do a chapter replay of when you were in the building, basically, using those terms. So yeah, it was a really fun game. I thoroughly enjoyed my time with this weird little fucking thing.
Well, it clocks in at $25. If you were on the fence, it is also a part of Game Pass. What are your thoughts on this one?
Get it on everything it's on. It is really good. I think it'll probably get better every time you play it. It won't change any time through any of them, but you'll understand the world a little better, which means you'll pay attention to other things, which I love the environments. They're all different. Every marble has its completely different environment. It's different look, everything. It's really cool.
Cool. Sounds good. Let's see. Next game is Deflector, developed by Arrowfist Games, published by Red Deer Games, released September 29th on Xbox One, Series X and S, and Switch. For $22.99, Deflector is a hack and slash game where you'll experience a dynamic gameplay with unlimited and unique combo system. Test your reflex, don't let your guard down, enemies will have no mercy. Jump into the future, select your loadout, and save the world from the enormous and well-known danger in history, viruses. Jacob, what is Deflector?
So you get sucked into this computer system, and I don't think it's exactly like a Tron kind of thing where it's like you're a human that got sucked into a computer. I think it's just you're part of, I don't know. Like the story is a little hazy and it doesn't seem to be all that important. But the game starts you off with a simple shield, and you have to learn how to deflect with the shield. And that's a lot. You know, believe it or not, with a game called Deflector, that is what you are going to be doing a lot of the time. And there are you do have access to like weapons in it, but a bulk of it is going to be aiming your shield at stuff and deflecting your enemy shots back at them. And a lot of that's just achieved with your short-term shield, which only lasts for like a second or two at a clip. And of course, it does recharge like immediately and become available after that. It's a lot of timing. It's a lot of dashing, and just making sure that like you're hitting what you need to. And the levels are getting it's not necessarily like from point A to point B, but levels are finished when you've eliminated all the opponents in the level. And then you're presented with like this world map, which gives you multiple routes that you're allowed to travel through. And, you know, it's just, sometimes I was able to complete everything on the map. And then other times, like, it was very much like, okay, you took this route, you can't go like and collect all the stuff at this other thing. Like, you need to just keep pressing forward. So I'm not entirely sure how that exactly works out, but, pretty much when you're choosing your route, it's the game telling you like, well, this is going to be tougher, but you'll get this, or you can go here and like this will become available to you. And it's just a constant like swapping out of your loadout and figuring out like what's going to work best for you. So, you know, the gameplay is solid. I do enjoy the tinkering factor with it a lot. My only thing is that like I'm hoping that people will discover this game and, you know, like give it a try, because I think there's a lot of fun to be had in this game. It's just, I feel like the look of it, you know, is rather generic, for like a sci-fi indie game. That's, I don't know. It like the aesthetics didn't really do anything for me. And I'm hoping that like that doesn't deter other people from checking it out, because the gameplay's solid and I had a lot of fun with it.
There's a shitload of achievements in this game. There's like 77 achievements. I love when companies have fun with the achievements.
That's a lot. Holy shit.
There were a couple of them that I was getting for like random, for doing random things. Yeah. So,
well, the game clocks in at $23. What do you think?
23, I mean, the thing is that like I want people to play it. I think I'd be more cool with a $15 price tag for it, but for 23, yeah, like you're gonna get plenty of play out of it. It's just not the prettiest game out there.
Cool. All right, next up, Gravity Oddity, developed and published by Invincible Cat, released September 13th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $14.99. Embark on a one-man rescue mission across the galaxy to bring back your kidnapped roommate in this roguelike space action adventure. Jacob, what is going on in Gravity Oddity?
So, honestly, like I really enjoyed my time with it. I just wish it wasn't a roguelike. I really do. Like, I just wish it was one character, and you got to keep all your crap at the end of the mission if you decided to quote unquote give up and go back to this to the spaceship, which I discovered is in fact a mistake, because then you lose all the crap that you got. But anyways, the plot of it is that you and your roommate Gary are on this spaceship. You know, you're doing your stuff, you're like working your like whatever jobs you have, and then one day you find out he's been kidnapped and rent is due. How are you going to pay rent? Well, obviously you have to go get Gary. So you embark on this intergalactic adventure to get your roommate back so you can pay rent. And each area that you have your ship warp into, you have to gather. You could, if you want to, like if you're foolhardy enough, you could just go straight for like the main boss and just try to defeat them. However, the game tells you early on, like, hey, you should definitely like scavenge for stuff first, and like, you know, take on some of the other ships in the area and steal their crap before you take on the main boss. But if you feel suicidal, you can, you know, you can go off and do that. And so, yeah, like, so there's like four or five different areas in each galaxy or solar system, whatever you want to call it, that you're allowed to scavenge. And some of them are just like deserted areas that you could just go in, grab like the mod that you find. Other ones are guarded by various robots. Sometimes you have to like blow up their shields first before you can defeat them. Other times, like, there's like environmental hazards that you have to get past, usually using zero gravity. But all in all, like, it's solid and it's a lot of fun. I just wish it wasn't a roguelike. Like, like, it just drove me up the wall that like I could lose all my stuff that easily, and the game doesn't like just automatically end if your character's life ends. You just get introduced as the new roommate who has popped in, and then the ship's robot's like, all right, so let me catch you up to speed. This is what happened. You need to go get stuff so we can afford rent. Now go. But yeah, I had a lot of fun like trying to figure out, like, you know, floating around at zero gravity and like managing like my guy's rocket pack and my weapons, and just like trying to collect stuff.
I had a tricky time with the controls. Like, they made you use all the buttons on the controller, which is nice that they put them all to use, but it just, my brain wasn't putting everything together, and I would continue.
Some of them were, yeah, click I the do wrong remember thing and like the shooting thing, or like you are the button that would make your mag boots activate or whatever they were called. Yeah, that was a little weird, but honestly, I got used to it. It's just, I don't know. I just like, I got frustrated with the roguelike aspect of it. I just wish that it was just like a standard game. You know what I mean? But I enjoyed it. I thought it was solid.
Cool. Well, the game clocks in, where are my notes? $15. What are your thoughts on Gravity Oddity?
$15 is totally worth it. Yeah, I'd recommend it. You know, if you're not a fan of roguelikes like myself, I would just caution you to, like, you know, get it for 15, but just, you know, tread carefully. Don't go in there like guns blazing.
All right. Well, we got one final game to talk about tonight, and we got to keep it clean the rest of the show, Aki and Jacob.
Well,
starting now, I guess. final game to talk about tonight is Rainbow High, Rainbow Rush, or Runway Rush, I'm sorry, developed by Zalox Studios, published by Outright Games, released September 22nd on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $39.99. Welcome to the world of Rainbow High. We're all about letting our true colors shine through creativity, fashion, and friendship. You can make it through Rainbow High. You can make it through anything. Jacob, did you make it through Rainbow High?
I did, in fact.
I don't believe you.
I beat the game.
I still don't
believe believe that either.
No, yeah, I actually beat the game. Like, that and Operation Wolf were like the only were the most recent games that I've actually like gone the whole way through and beaten. They're very similar titles too.
yeah, I'm sure. tell us about Rainbow High.
So Rainbow High, the cooking romance first person shooter roguelike. No, it's actually, I don't even know what you'd call this. What kind of game would you call it? Just, action, because it's not
adventure,
action.
Adventure, maybe, I guess.
Adventure, yeah, I don't know.
Adventure, but, life sim adventure?
Maybe, but there's not really much life simming anyway, okay. So if you played Bratz, which came out, I think, earlier in the year from Outright Games, it's very similar to that. You play as one of six girls that attends Rainbow High, which is this line of dolls that I'm not familiar with. I think there's also a TV show based on it. I don't know. But anyways, you play one of these six girls who are like all best friends, and they live at Rainbow High, which is this...
You're not familiar with it.
Well, it's like they describe it as like an art, like a fashion, as like a fashion school, but it also seems like it's an art school, really. Like you have one girl who specializes in fashion. There's one girl who specializes in music. There's another one that specializes in animation. And so at the very beginning of the game, your teachers announce that the freshmen, which is, of course, your year, are going to be able to decide how this year's like fashion show is going to get run at Rainbow High. So expectations are, you know, they're big for everyone. And they have to like, and so by the end of the week, all the girls have to turn in their like projects. And then like, of course, naturally, our six heroines are the ones that are picked to, you know, run the fashion show and all that other kind of stuff. And it is a lot of going around the school, doing fetch quests, playing mini games. Each girl has their own specific mini game. Like one of them is just getting the cursor from point A to point B using directional buttons. Another one is snapping the camera when a certain item pops up in the I don't know what the heck they call it, but whatever. Anyways, you have to click the camera when that happens. I'm sorry, I'm not up to date on all my camera terminology. You know, and there are similar games like that, and it's a lot of fetch quests playing those mini games. And also just like going around the school and seeing what secrets you can find, because there are pieces of all the girls' different outfits that you can change them into. Like every single one of them has a winter outfit, everybody has three outfits. Like it's a winter outfit, a cheerleader outfit, and there's
I'll be right back.
I think it's formal. Anyway. And as you're doing all these fetch quests and looking around and stuff, you earn diamonds, which allows you to unlock these, uniforms. And as you progress, you can change those out. And it's really just working your way to the end of, to the fashion show that is going to run at the end of the game. So obviously you do your fashion show, and credits. And one of the nice things about this, and perhaps this was a lesson that they learned from Bratz, there's actually a post game mission or a couple of missions, and it seems to be some sort of scavenger hunt kind of thing. And it opens up the rest of the school to you. So then you're able to go back and find any of the missing fashion pieces that you needed, as well as having additional stuff to do in the game, which is a nice addition because, I mean, for less experienced game players, like, you know, like there might be like 20 hours worth of stuff to do, but for people like, you know, Joe, Aki, and myself, like we can easily kill like a game like this in like 3 to 4 hours. And so like there is more to do and it doesn't seem as empty. And honestly, this one has a lot more polish to it than Bratz. I was I was honestly pleased with it. As far as this goes, I don't recall if it's the same devs. But yeah, like, I thought it was pretty cool. One of my favorite things was that I was telling my wife about how, like, there's a mission in the game to go find the archives. And like, they described it as like, you know, oh, well, the archives are hidden away. And my wife was like, yeah, that's actually really true in academia. And I was telling her like where they put the archives in the game, which I won't spoil because it's a plot detail, but she was like, oh, that sounds lovely. And they actually got quite a few of the details right in terms of library stuff, which as a nerd and somebody who also actually worked at the headquarters for Urban, the parent company of Urban Outfitters, I was actually pleasantly surprised that they actually got a decent amount right with the look of that kind of stuff. I only had one complaint, and honestly, it was probably just because they just decided to reuse the asset as a standard bookshelf, but there is one of the rooms where they have compact shelving, which a lot of archives have. It allows you to store way more stuff in a smaller area than normal. And they actually used one of the compact shelves in a classroom by itself, like just one single shelving unit, which no place, like nobody would actually have that. Like that was the only like, you know, that's not right. But again, they probably just used it to save time on an asset. And it's like, honestly, this game's not aimed at 38-year-old men.
What?
So, yeah, I know. I know. It's disappointing.
I don't believe you.
But honestly, like, it's a very chill game. I was having a lot of fun with it. So, you know, I'm not ashamed to say it. I enjoyed my time with Rainbow High.
Cool. Well, it clocks in at $40. What do you think?
If you have a kid that is interested in Rainbow High, $40 is easily worth it. If you're like me, where you're a 38-year-old guy, I don't know that $40 is really going to, you know, be cool with you. So you might want to pick it up on a sale. But honestly, I'd recommend the game. Like, especially when compared to Bratz, I thought that this was a far more better experience. And I was really pleased with how Outright did for it. So if they're looking at doing a sequel or anything like that, I'd definitely be down to checking it out.
Cool. All right. Well, that is it for this episode. We made it through another one. Thanks.
Yay.
Thanks to you, Jacob, and you, Aki, for being here. Big thanks to Bree for coming on, doing her thing. Music this episode, since we reviewed Bomberman, we're going to play some Bomberman from the 1UPS. How's that sound?
That sounds pretty good.
It does sound good.
And you know what?
You
know what I realized that we forgot to mention?
What?
We forgot to talk about our partnership.
Huh? Oh, yeah.
The partnership. We didn't bring that up during the news. I was so disappointed.
No, we'll mention it next week. I want to wait for my stuff to come in and try it before I talk about it. So,
okay, that's fair.
So, that's music fair. Again, we're going to play some Bomberman from the 1UPS. Does anyone have any final words to end the show?
Farfig Newton.
Going along with the usual brand ambassador stuff, I'm honestly looking forward to playing Paw Patrol World. I was watching my youngest play it earlier today. And we're just not allowed to like review it. Okay. Yeah. I'm actually kind of stoked to play it. I'm not gonna lie.